Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling, Wednesday, October 8th, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, brother?
Nothing much. You were right about the Yankees figuring it out. Down 6-3. Honestly, though,
as much as I want them to lose, there's no way they were going to get swept.
I have to tip the cap. Aaron Judge, that was some alien nonsense that he did with a three-run home run to tie that game up. About 7 inches on the inside part of the plate, tailing in on him up in the zone, and he nearly pulled it foul. 100 miles per hour, nearly pulled it foul. I mean, that's alien nonsense.
Only a few hitters in the history of baseball would be able to hit that ball.
That was absolutely
ridiculous.
And
he hit it off the top of the foul pole, too.
Yep.
It made me sick.
Did you know the stat about the is the Blue Jays?
Yeah. 39-1 or something like that.
Yeah, I think I don't. Let me get the exact number here for you.
I think they were 39-0.
Yeah, they were 29-0.
29-0
this season. When they scored 6 runs or more on the road. lost 9-6.
Boo.
Thought for a while they were going to handle business. Then Aaron Judge, he just ends that. Then Jazz Chisholm adds insult to injury. And there we are. Also, Cal Raleigh, well done. Good job. This MVP race, they're showing up in the postseason, too. So far this postseason, you've seen Cal Raleigh. They won 8-4 last night. Mariners have a 2-1 lead over the Tigers. 7 for 15, a bomb, 4 RBIs, OPS, 1.262. Is that good? I think that's good. I'm not sure. Not totally positive. All right, now we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM ESPN and yours truly. We're going to open with overreaction or not an overreaction. I want to dive into a couple of stories that, to me, seem to be a bit overblown, doing a little bit too much with them, the Jonathan Gannon story. And then yesterday, did you see the New York Times Athletic article posted and published about Arch Manning?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the headline, and I don't read, like, my rule is if the headline or the question that this article is asking is something I can't agree with, I'm not going to read the article. But the headline went viral, people going nuts about it. It was basically, is Arch Manning college football's first flop, which we know is not true. But there was a lot of reaction out there and people going after the New York Times and people going after The Athletic that I found just a bit weird. I'll explain what I mean by that here in Overreaction, not an Overreaction. I need to get to my post week 5 NFL power rankings. A lot of switch ups. Don't have any undefeated teams anymore. So it's not as easy.
Are the Jags in?
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I do have a couple of first timers in my top 5. So we'll get to that.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
I have a new number 1, but we will discuss that here around 4:30, bottom half of this hour, trip around the NFL at 5:30. And then we're going to be out a little bit early today because it's the second preseason game for your Memphis Grizzlies playing the Celtics. Hopefully Cedric Howard makes a shot tonight, right?
Is the over-under 0.5?
Yeah, I guess we can go check that. We do have – I'm sure you have a sports book on your phone. I have not checked.
I don't.
You don't?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Do you have accounts, though?
No.
Not at all.
Good
for you.
I had a FanDuel account back in the day when I did FanDuel stuff, but No, I don't.
When you're getting freebies.
Yeah, yeah, free- dude.
I had that account when they were giving me freebies.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Also, Riley Green just hit a bomb for Detroit. 4-3
Detroit. 4-3
Detroit.
And they're trying to tie this thing up and force a game five. As far as guests are concerned, David Cobb at 5 o'clock and Colton Denning at 6 o'clock. Now, we have a lot to get to, an overreaction, not an overreaction, so I don't want to waste any time. Hit it, Connor.
All right, Gabe, the big story happening right now. The Cardinals had fined head coach Jonathan Gannon $100,000 for a sideline interaction with running back Amari DiMercato, per Adam Schefter. Gannon was seen in a heated exchange with DiMercato after he dropped the ball before crossing the goal line on what would have been a game-sealing touchdown. During the exchange, Gannon was physical with the running back, which quickly drew attention across social media. The team reviewed the incident internally and issued the fine earlier. Jonathan Gannon's $100,000 fine was justified. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Mercy me. Overreaction. I watched the video. He slapped his pads twice. Yes, he was a little physical with him. And I am very much in the boat of obviously. Don't get physical with your players. You don't need to lay hands on your players. But at the same time, the Cardinals going out of their way to find their head coach to make a practice squad elevated running back some martyr is so insane to me. It's beyond the pale. It's wild. That was one of the biggest plays in that game, if not the biggest play in that game. You go up 28-3, the game's over with. That's not what happened. He drops it. It's a touchback. Titans go down, kick a field goal, and then they ultimately go on to win the game after some other crazy happenings. Kyler Murray with a snap off his face and then a interception that turned into a touchdown for the Titans. I get that it wasn't the only play. But a head coach, you got to understand, that's their livelihood. And Jonathan Gannon with the Arizona Cardinals has not had great results. He needs every possible win he can get. And that's the type of loss against the Tennessee Titans, probably the worst team in the National Football League right now, that could get you fired. So I don't blame him for being fired up. I just think, you know, for me, I think we're a little bit too soft about this type of thing. A little bit too soft. Now, if he turned around and did a spinning back kick directly to Amari DiMercato's face, yes.
Or if he just hit him in the face.
If he hit him in the face, I'd have a problem with that.
Right.
But he slapped his pads and his right arm once. There was no altercation after that. He apologized. And a $100,000 fine in that situation is absolutely insane. You're making a mountain out of a molehill. There's no reason to do that, to make some type of example out of Jonathan Gannon. Now, I will say this. If this was something that was perpetual with guys that made bad decisions, if Kyler Murray threw three picks in a game and on the third pick every single game, here comes Jonathan Gannon getting physical with him and roughing him up and grabbing his face mask, sure. After the second time, go ahead and fine him. This is the first time we've seen Jonathan Gannon do anything close to that. So this fine is stupidity to me, and I don't think it's justified. I think we need to take into consideration Jonathan Gannon is coaching for his life right now. Emotions are running high. And when a play like that is made by a player like that, he's allowed to be frustrated. We need to calm the hell down with the back and forth about being physical with your players. I don't even think he was overly physical. And I got this, too. When I talked about this, tweeted about this, I got the, what if the roles were reversed? You know, what if the player went after the coach?
We've seen that.
I've seen that.
Travis Kelce did it last season.
In the Super Bowl.
He did it last year.
And you know what they said about him?
Oh, he's competitive.
He's a competitor.
He's all fired up.
We've
quite literally seen it all the time.
The conversation around this is so blown out of proportion, it's unfathomable to me. It's ridiculous how much this has been discussed, and it's ridiculous to me that the Arizona Cardinals, not the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals, fine their head coach for this.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. It's a soft move by the Arizona Cardinals. To be honest, most Cardinals fans watching the game were probably happy he did it. It was a dumbass play by him. I don't understand this epidemic that's happening.
Dropping the ball
in college football and the NFL. Why are you dropping? It's not even a cool celebration. Just wait until you're in the end zone.
I didn't get to see the full segment, but I have been told by some people that Kyle Brandt today, I think he's on Good Morning Football now.
Love Kyle Brandt.
I think he did a segment on it. It was like a 6 minute, 7 minute segment on it. And I think what he surmised was that, you know, these guys have scored a lot in their career. So they just lose a little bit of focus before they get into the end zone because they've done it so many times. I don't know if there's a good answer as to why this happens. But honestly, if you're cruising into the end zone, double hand it. Do not let go of that damn ball. I don't understand it. I've never understood
but
it.
But I find this quite ridiculous. And I think that Hurd brought up this point earlier. You know, you're giving Jerry Jones a slap on the wrist type of fine for flipping off fans, but you're giving a thumbs up.
To be fair on that, I get the point being made. He got fined $250,000, more, and that was from the NFL themselves, right?
Jerry Jones isn't finding himself.
And this is the Cardinals. They didn't need to do it. The NFL was not going to do anything to Jonathan Gannon, and the Cardinals did it.
It's so ridiculous that they fined their own head coach for being a little bit physical with the player who, in the moment, may have deserved it a little bit. These are grown-ass men playing football. They can take a little tap from their coach when he's upset with them, when they know that they effed up.
If you saw Gabe Kuhn...
He did punch him in the face.
If you saw Gabe Kuhn circa 2015, 16, and 17 in spring practice with Mike Norvell, Justin Fuente, Vance Weiss, you would have wanted those guys fired if you think this is a $100,000 fine-worthy... you know, action by Jonathan Gannon.
We worship at the feet of Nick Saban.
Correct.
When we talk about head football coaches.
He's laid his hands on some players before, brother.
Are we acting like behind closed doors?
He made one of his offensive linemen cry when he was with the Miami Dolphins.
Dude, Nick Saban used to have a button at his desk where he'd close the door behind players.
I mean, it's just... We're a bit too soft. Is that the main takeaway here? We're a bit too soft.
I think so. I think it's a little bit soft. Listen, if you wanted to fine him like 10 G's, whatever, $100,000 is crazy. Crazy. All right, next one. The most likely upset from week 7 of the college football season could take place in Columbia, Missouri. Overreaction, not an underreaction.
Overreaction.
Not an overreaction.
That'd kind of be the same thing, wouldn't it? Mm. Number 8, Alabama, visiting number 14, Mizzou. You know what? Not an overreaction. Not an overreaction. I think Mizzou is going to spring the upset in this spot. Alabama's riding high. They've won 4 straight games. Looked solid, although I have mentioned I don't know exactly what boat to put them in because the data points are all over the place. You lose to Florida State. Florida State's lost 2 now. You play that Georgia game, you win it 24-21, but you didn't score a point in the second half. I do know one thing about this Alabama team and that passing offense. They're very good, right? Ty Simpson is slinging the ball around the yard, and you have Jeremy, you have Ryan Williams, you have Isaiah Horton. I think the tight end, Josh Cuevas, is a good player. I think that they will score points against this Mizzou team. But a bit of a trivia question, and I think you'll know the answer because it's pretty obvious. There's only one team that's top 4 in total offense and total defense in college football. Do you know who that team is?
It's either Missouri or Alabama.
It's Mizzou.
Yeah,
it's Mizzou.
It's got to be one of those two.
And when you look at their run game, Ahmad Hardy has been the best running back in college football. He has 640 yards through 5 games. He's been running it. Their offensive line has been phenomenal. Bo Prabula, and we saw this in game 1, by the way, with Florida State versus Alabama. Tommy Castellanos, I know he's a little faster than Bo Prabula, and he can make some bigger plays, more explosive plays with his legs. But Alabama struggled with Tommy Castellanos' legs, and Bo Prabula has them. And I stand by this, too. If you gave True Serum to James Franklin at this point, I know Drew Aller's thought of as this NFL draft-style quarterback. If you gave True Serum,
still,
he probably would have. He'd probably tell you Bo Prabula may be a better college football quarterback than the guy he has in Drew Aller. He let Bo Prabula walk. He's doing great things with Mizzou. He's thrown for 300 yards in multiple games. He's run for 50-plus in multiple games. Their defense is very, very good. They stop the run pretty decent in the back end. So it's going to be a pretty decent challenge for Alabama to keep that passing game going the way it's been rolling the past 4 weeks. I think that Mizzou is going to upset Alabama. Alabama coming into this game high and mighty. Mizzou is going to be up for it. They're playing Alabama. They're undefeated. They want to prove they're a college football playoff team, and they have the dudes to go do it. So I think this is absolutely the most likely upset from week seven as we head into the weekend. But there are some other ones out there. But this one sticks out to me. This one's going to be fun to watch. I do think it may come down to the last couple of drives, right? I think this will be one of the best games of the weekend as well.
Staying in the SEC, Arch Manning is Texas's biggest problem. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
This is, okay, this is tough. Okay, because I think if Arch Manning came in and lived up to the hype that was set for him, he wouldn't be their biggest problem.
He'd be the greatest quarterback
right?
of all time.
But I think this is an overreaction. I think there's other things about that team that are missing right now. Notably, the offensive line playing in front of a first-year starter. They've been awful. They don't have a run game. Quinn Wisner's a good running back. He has nowhere to run. 8 rushes for 11 yards. I'll say it again. 8 rushes for 11 yards. Against Florida. They ran altogether, Arch Manning, their leading rusher, with 37. They ran altogether 26 rushes for 52 yards. 26 for 52. Arch Manning had got sacked six times. Six times. That offensive line stinks. And we have been critical of one guy in particular this week, where it feels like no one really wants to approach this conversation, right? Steve Sarkisian. I dug into the numbers, Connor, and I learned a couple of pretty interesting factoids about one Steve Sarkisian, who we talked about yesterday. We don't think he's a top five, top 10 coach. I don't know what he's shown you that would make him a top five, top 10 coach. Last year, good year, awesome. Texas was back, beat Arizona State, a team that lost a couple of times in the Big 12 in his one college football playoff game, and he probably shouldn't have won that game if it weren't for a mistargeting. Arizona State probably goes down and scores and wins the ball game. But this is what I learned about Sark since he took over at Texas. Sark is 2-8 against AP top 10 opponents, and he is also 9-15 in one score games. I don't think he has a feel for how he needs to use Arch, and I think his offensive line isn't good enough to really help Arch get those shots downfield that he seems to be good at. So, in the end of the day, I think this all comes back to Steve Sarkisian not having the team that he needed to have as an AP preseason number one team. I think it comes back to Sark, and if you just hear him in the media every week at this point, when he gets asked questions about Arch, he clearly doesn't quite understand how to use him at this point. So, I think that, yes, if you have a short list of issues, Arch Manning is on that list. But I think the offensive line and Steve Sarkisian himself need some blame for this as well. I also saw this yesterday, and I wanted to approach this because I similar to the Jonathan Gannon story and the outcry from one side saying, oh, never put your hands on guys. Never do that. I think this one was kind of similar, seeing the outcry. New York Times, The Athletic posted an article, published an article yesterday about Arch Manning, and the headline was, is Arch Manning college football's first flop? Obviously, no. We know that's wrong. It's a ridiculous headline. The two guys that were actually ahead of him in his recruiting class, do you know who they were? Jaden Rashada and Malachi Nelson. I'd say they're bigger flops. Malachi Nelson's the worst quarterback in college football at UTEP. Malachi Nelson's at UTEP. And Jaden Rashada is he just got benched by an FCS school in Sacramento State. So, like, even in his recruiting class, he's not the biggest flop. But that's beyond the point. The other part that they wrote, this was part of the tweet, many people are having a bad year in college football, but Arch Manning is having one of the worst. The quarterback has gone from preseason Heisman Trophy favorite and projected number one NFL draft pick to a man synonymous with failure. Now, listen, it's a ridiculous headline. It's way overdone. It's, quite frankly, a bit ridiculous. Like, we can agree on that. But, Connor, I have a bit of an issue with the amount of people that have just come to Arch Manning's rescue from this article. I understand that the headline from The Athletic was flagrant and, quite frankly, incorrect. There has been more than one flop in college football's history, especially at the quarterback position. But the amount of folks babying this Manning kid is ridiculous. Nasty takes, gross takes, incorrect takes. They come with being a Manning and being the starting quarterback at Texas. And we see loads of nonsense daily. First take, just go watch it. You'll see a million takes just like this article. Stephen A. Smith talks out of his rear end every single day on national television. But this story, for some reason, has everybody ready to storm the New York Times building. Stop babying the kid. I think we're in a different day and age, Connor, too. Like, these kids, whether you call them kids or adults or they're growing into themselves, whatever it is, they make a bunch of NIL money. His NIL valuation was like $3.7 million before the season. He's out there in front doing commercials constantly. He's a Manning. He can take it. He's going to be okay. You don't have to baby him and come to his defense because of one ridiculous take and article that was put out there. Ask any NFL draft bust that has ever come through the National Football League. Ask Jamarcus Russell how he was talked about. No one came to his defense. Johnny Manziel. I mean, you just keep going down the list of guys that have been treated in this manner. But Arch Manning, like, everybody wants to just rush to save the kid. The Mannings are okay. Arch is going to be okay. I just had to get that off my chest. It bothered me yesterday to a certain extent. The kid, he hasn't played well. Let him take his lumps. He may be better for it on the back end. He should be better for it on the back end. And he has two good guys in his corner that can tell him how to manage that in Eli and Peyton.
Correct.
They dealt with that criticism in their life as well.
And his grandfather.
So, like, this like savior complex that everybody has with young Arch Manning, just like, let it go. He'll be fine. It's okay. One ridiculous article, one ridiculous take about him, whether it's incorrect or not, is not going to break the kid. He doesn't need your defending at every step. It's ridiculous. And these were also the same people through 4 weeks of the season that were, you know, they were piling on him. And then all of a sudden, New York Times Athletic writes this article, and now they want to come to his defense. I just want to point that out.
I feel like the art of criticism has been lost in recent years. It has become inflammatory, hot take culture, instead of just being able to criticize without it becoming personal or without having to make some grand statement. Arch Manning's play this season absolutely deserves criticism. That also doesn't mean that he's college football's biggest flop or first flop.
He's like, not.
What are we doing?
He's inevitably just not.
That having a headline like that or having a statement like that basically makes the rest of your criticisms, whether they're valid or not, null and void, because nobody's going to focus on those things. We've got to bring back level-headed sports discussion, because these are athletes. They go out there and do a public thing. They are going to be criticized and should be criticized sometimes. That goes with the territory. They sign up for it. They know the deal. We know the deal. So when people actually criticize and don't make it personal, we can't be freaking out all the time because there's one bad headline sometimes.
And he's,
it's going to happen.
Yes.
And we just look at it and say, that's kind of ridiculous. That's a bit hyperbolic. He deserves criticism. He's not the biggest flop. But let's talk about the actual criticism that he deserves. This whole rally around Arch thing is silly. It's silly. He's been terrible this year.
He hasn't been good. It's okay. I would imagine the Mannings let him know, his uncle, his grandfather, other uncle probably let him know, going to Texas, playing for Sark, being in the SEC, if you don't live up to the hype, you're going to get some of this. He probably knew it. It's part of the deal.
Thanksgiving's coming up. He's probably sitting at the kids' table. He has probably been demoted from the big table to said kids' table for his performance at Texas this year.
And as a guy who is a supporter of what has happened at Colorado with Deion Sanders and Shedeur Sanders, over the past year and a half, or 2.5 years, how much unfair criticism have those people taken? They fight back against it to a certain extent. But I don't see the outrage about the nonsense that gets said about them on a consistent basis. I see a lot of people still throwing out the arrogant and entitlement words and, you know, daddy ball and all these things about them. But when it comes to Arch Manning, he gets one, a singular negative headline written him by a big corporation who does news, and now it's the end of the world. It's like it's the worst thing that's ever happened.
It's one of those moments where the headline deserves criticism, but the player also still deserves criticism.
Yes. I would, like I've been saying this entire time, what The Athletic wrote was wrong. It's incorrect. It just truthfully is. He is not college football's first flop. He's very far from it. But at the same time, like the amount of people just ready to jump in there and start, you know, boxing people or storm the New York Times building, I just find it ridiculous. It's insanity. He doesn't need your saving. He will be okay. I promise you.
You did touch on something, though, that I did want to ask about. In your opinion, to maximize Arch Manning's talents, they need to be throwing downfield more.
Well, they have to have an O-line that protects him.
Sure.
So, like, there's a mix there, right? You have to pick your spots to try to use his downfield arm talent. And we saw it against Florida. He stepped up in the pocket.
The best throws I've seen him make
to Ryan Wingo
are downfield.
Yes.
It's the little shutdowns he struggles with,
but at the same
enough.
Time, if you're Sark, this is where I have the criticism. Develop him on the underneath routes and the intermediate routes. I thought you were a quarterback whisperer. You have a five-star talent that you're running out there that sat for 2 years. Did you not work on these things the first 2 years you had him on campus while Quinn Ewers was starting? Just kind of weird to me. Just kind of bizarre that he's very good at one thing. You're trying to do that, but your offensive line can't hold up. And then sort of those underneath, intermediate, check down routes he struggles with. You have to be better as a coach at bringing your quarterback along. And I think it's pretty clear at this point Steve Sarkisian has not been able to do that.
All right, last one. Penny Hardaway commented on the lack of fandomonium he feels is present within the Tigers fan base. In his comments, he acknowledged a few factors going into it. This is what he had to say. It's just there's a dark cloud or stigma over the downtown area right now, and people just aren't coming down, he said. And it's a lot that's happening in our city. It's a lot that's happening in our economy. You can see the numbers being down on the fans. It's kind of sad because we've lost that fandomonium, but I think we have to figure out a way to get the fanfare back. Penny is correct. There is a lack of fandomonium surrounding Memphis Tigers basketball. Overreaction or not an overreaction?
Not an overreaction. He's right. He's right. I mean, this used to be the city's team, and it doesn't quite feel like that every home game at FedEx Forum. Not as much in that arena every single game. And he's right. I will say what he brought up to me is less of an issue with the quote unquote fandomonium, lack of fandomonium. I think there's other reasons that I would point out that are way bigger. First of all, playing the American Basketball Conference is absolutely miserable. No one wants to show up for a Tuesday night game against Tulsa anymore. That's just the truth of the matter. Like, I think that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, contributing factor. But, like, digging deeper, we've had this conversation multiple times over, Connor. But what does Penny do to put together his roster at the...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Point turns it over, transfer portal names that people have to familiarize themselves with every single year. Like, I get texts constantly from people that want to know about this basketball program and who Doug McDaniel is. Do you think he can live up to the hype? They don't even know that he went to Kansas State. They don't know that he was at Michigan scoring 15 points per game at one point. It used to be where you'd have guys stay for a couple years, or you'd have that number one recruiting class under Cal where, Derrick Rose is there, CDR is there, you know Dorsey, you know all these guys. Now, you don't have guys staying over. He has a roster this year of 15 new guys, brand new, that no one's familiar with. If P.J. Haggerty would have stayed, there's a built-in reason to show up to FedEx Forum to go watch a ball game. He's phenomenal. He scores 20-some-odd points per game, but that's not what happened. He went to Kansas State. So I think the transfer portal era and the lack of talent staying for multiple years, for fans to latch on to these guys, I think that's been a big contributing factor as well to the lack of fandomonium. I think there's a lot of examples over the years of fans being able to resonate with players because they hear them multiple times. Like, Jeremiah Martin never won anything of consequence, but I still hear people talk about Jeremiah Martin because, you know what? He was on campus for 4 years. He was here the whole time. But I don't think guys stay on campus long enough for fans to resonate with them. And I think that's a big problem. And Memphis isn't the only team dealing with that. But I think Memphis deals with that pretty consistently.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that Penny made incorrect comments. And I want people to go and read or listen to what he actually had to say. Because I have seen, the fandomonium part of the comment get posted. And a lot of people's reactions are, well, look at what's happening to downtown. Look at the National Guard. Look at the economy. And he addressed all those things when he was talking about it in his comments. And because it isn't a one answer, it isn't a black and white type of scenario here. Everything that you just mentioned is true. The economic part is true. What's happening downtown is true. The National Guard being present is probably going to be true. All of those factors are present within this discussion. I do think the biggest one, though, is there's no relationship between this team and the city yet. And we saw it last year. It took a couple of games, but to be honest, after they beat UConn, everybody was like, okay, we're going to buy into this team.
Right.
And you could feel that fever around the city. You could feel that excitement around the city for Memphis basketball. But like you said, the schedule being poor is what it is. There's nothing that the University of Memphis or Penny Hardaway can do to change that except get out of this conference, and we know that they are doing everything in their power to do that because they understand teams don't want to go watch Rice get their heads beat in by Memphis on a random night. It's just that's not what you want to do with your money, is let's go watch Rice and a team that I don't
really
know.
On a work at a school night. You're just not getting people out there
so
for that.
So all of those things are true. I think that this is one of those situations where winning heals all.
Yeah,
if this team goes out there and wins basketball games like last year's team did, people will begin to have connections to these players pretty instantly. That winning cures all in sports. And so, to be honest, I think that there is responsibility on the fan base to be open to this team and to go out and support them. But there's also responsibility on the players and the team and Penny to go out there and win basketball games.
Yeah.
If you want there to be a fandemonium, give us a reason.
And engage with the fans.
Right. It's the same thing that happened in Memphis football. This season, we were like, what is this Memphis football Tigers team going to look like? That was the question that we were asking all offseason. We were even asking it 3 games into the year.
Yep.
And then they played Arkansas, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a Tigers fever about football all of a sudden in the city. It is with Memphis and with the economy of the city and with what's going on downtown, which, by the way, go downtown. It's fine. You're going to have a great time.
It's always the people that don't go.
Yeah. Downtown is really fun. Sign someone who goes downtown a lot. You'll probably see my ass down
constantly.
There. You'll probably see me down there. Come say hi.
Have you ever had your car even like a jiggled handle on your car?
No. Not downtown.
I haven't had anything downtown.
There are
around the city I've had it.
Yeah, but it's...
But not downtown. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah, that's a different conversation. But... It go downtown, go have fun, go support the Tigers. But this Tigers team has to win, just like the football team had to win, and then people bought in. That's what has to happen in the city. Happens every year. If you don't have players that have been here for a couple of seasons, People have no connection yet. And that's that is okay. It's okay to not have a connection to this team until they start winning some basketball games.
And what
games.
I do
that's
respect
fine.
Is Penny like addressed this too with players staying for multiple years.
That's why I would encourage people to go look to see what he actually
yesterday,
said.
He mentioned yesterday.
I thought it was very thoughtful.
He's hoping for 7 or 8 guys to stay over from this year to next year's
That'd
game.
Be a home run.
And that's what you really, truly need to get people to engage with your product, to engage with this team on a consistent basis.
You need consistency within the team.
I don't
think
there's one answer.
No.
But I think there's a couple that could solve a lot of these issues. I really do.
I think at the top of the list, it's win games.
Yeah.
But they did
last year, and the attendance wasn't great.
To be honest, the main one is different conference.
Different conference, and again, I think knowing the players, engaging with the players, resonating with these players, when you know fan base doing that with them,
like
I think that's massive. That's a big thing.
Let's say in some magical world, if PJ and Dane were on this roster, people beat
price
these
of admission
games.
Right there.
Yeah.
I don't, to be honest with you.
And just one of them.
I think there's very few people worrying about going downtown and the National Guard presence if you have those guys on your team and you put them on a poster and you know they're coming back. I feel like that conversation's kind of null and void for the most part. There's still going to be some people talking about it. Still some people staying away from downtown because of it. But I think if you had those stars and you had this understanding that, oh, this is going to be a top 25 team, this team could make a run in the NCAA tournament, I think people would get out of their house and go down to FedEx Forum regardless.
I think just being in a city like Memphis, people wait to spend their money when they know that the product's going to be worth it. We see it with the Grizzlies. We see it with Tigers football. We see it with Tigers basketball. We see it with every sports team in this city. It is how the economy of this city works, and it's how it probably always will work unless some crazy changes happen, but we can't snap our fingers and make it happen. So. Yep. I understand what Penny is saying. I thought his comments were pretty thoughtful. Yep. That's why I would encourage people to go actually see what he had to say in full. And if you can support, go support. But if you have to wait, I understand that too.
Are you ready for some NFL power rankings?
Yes. Can't wait to see.
Let's grab a break and I'll do that on the other side. Week 5 of the NFL season is in the rearview. Week 6 gets going tomorrow night. Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime. Eagles visiting the Giants. Eagles are going to be 7.5-point favorites. We'll break that down by the time we get to tomorrow. But we need to get into our post-Week 5 NFL power rankings. On the outside looking in, Jags are my 6th team. They're 2nd in turnover margin. They lead the NFL in takeaways. They're 4-1. They get respect. They're tied for the best record in the National Football League. I want to see how this continues, how it continues to go. Brian Thomas needs to come out of his shell a little bit more. Had a good catch this past week on Monday Night Football, so that was nice. But he just hasn't been playing up to snuff. Travis Hunter continues to get better, so I believe in that team. I just need to see more. The Rams are still around. The Rams, I still think, a very good team. Matt Stafford leads the NFL in pass yards. He's been great. He's thrown for 1,500 yards through 5 games. That's 300 yards per game. He's on a good pace. But they lost to the 49ers, and that leads me to my final honorable mention team, the 49ers. In any other situation, at 4-1, having beat the Rams at their place, the way they did with a backup quarterback, I'd throw them in my top 5. I am just very wary of their injuries, and I don't know how you couldn't be. Nick Bosa, done for the year. George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk still out for a little bit of time. Brock Purdy, even though Mac Jones has played well, Brock Purdy is on the shelf. Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall missed last week on Thursday night. So, like, I want to put them into my top 5. It's just those injuries keep holding me back week by week by week. But let's go ahead and get into the top 5. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Let's go.
How about it?
Let's go.
Baker Mayfield.
MVP Baker.
He's been absolutely phenomenal. And to be honest with you, I think he should be the MVP frontrunner through 5 weeks. Now, betting odds don't tell you that because Josh Allen, they expect to continue to be great, and Baker may have a tough week along the way, but Baker is at the top 5 in every statistical category that we care about when it comes to quarterbacks. And he just makes play after play after play. He's been good with his legs. He's actually third shortest odds to win the NFL MVP. But here's another thing to pay attention to with Baker Mayfield. He's getting a lot of help. Let's be very clear about that. Emeka Egbuka has stepped in as their first-round pick from Ohio State. He wasn't even the best receiver in his time at Ohio State, but he leads the NFL in rookie receiving yards. He's been phenomenal. And he has 5 touchdowns through 5 weeks. Chris Godwin just came back, and Mike Evans is going to be off the shelf here relatively soon.
Well, Bucky Irving's been really good.
And Bucky Irving's really great. Their offensive line's been holding up. They're also a top 10 rush defense. So you just put all these things together. This is a scary, scary team. A scary team.
They do give up a ton of points, though.
Sure.
When you look at their points
secondary
scored,
isn't the greatest. The pass defense is bottom half. But if you stop the run and you play the type of offense that they have so far this year, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt early in the season.
It's just very funny because when you look at their points scored versus points allowed, they've scored 135 this year. They have given up 132.
Plus three. Still in the positive.
Hey, that's positive, baby.
Yes. It's the first week of the Indiana Jones Colts making my power rankings. Colts are 4-1, and the stats don't lie. Through 5 weeks, they don't lie. They could, you know, I don't know if it tells the future, if it's going to predict the future, but they're 2nd in the NFL in points per game. They're 4th in yards per game. And Daniel Jones, there's a confidence about this guy right now with this Colts team that I haven't seen in his entire career. And we know largely he was with the New York Giants. How do you have confidence in that organization? But he's been great. And I think I'm gonna throw some stats at you that I found interesting. I saw them on Kay Adams' show up in Adams. But I think the main narrative is, oh, that offensive line is great. That's why Daniel Jones is thriving. Good run game. They keep him upright. Okay, some of those things are true. They do have the best run game in the National Football League so far this year. With Jonathan Taylor back there, and I'd say he's a top 3 back. But when you look at like his pressure statistics and how they pass protect, he's been avoiding a lot of pressures. He really has. The times he's been pressured so far this year, 57, according to Next Gen Stats. That's bottom half in the National Football League. The pressure percentage, also 35%. That's bottom half in the National Football League. Average time to pressure. So snap the ball, guy in your face, you're being pressured 2.46 seconds. That's 31st, 2nd worst in the National Football League. But he's only been sacked 4 times. That's 1st in the National Football League. And his passer rating under pressure with guys in his face, 106.3. That's 2nd in the National Football League. So he has been facing some pressure, but he's been able to escape and he's been able to make good throws when he's under pressure to add on to that run game. So it's no surprise that their offense has been thriving really well so far this year. And then defensively, very, very solid. They're putting it on other teams, too. They lead the NFL in point differential so far. They just finished a shellacking of the Raiders. Shout out John Martin, 40-6 this past weekend. Their average scoring margin, their average winning margin is plus 14.8. That's best in the National Football League. Colts, have to give you a tip of the cap. You're in at number 4. Philadelphia Eagles, I dropped them.
Yeah, that's fair.
They lost, but
yeah,
and they're in my top 5. So, like, I think they're a good team, obviously. But I'm trying to do my write up, right? Like, find some things about the Eagles that makes me feel the way I do about them. And the only thing I can come up with is past results. The only thing I can come up with is they're the reigning champs and they have the best roster in the NFL. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. But I'm telling you, go through rushing statistics, passing statistics, go through their defensive statistics. There is nothing to write home about through 5 weeks about this Eagles team. Besides their record, 4-1, they're winning more games than they're losing, and they have a good track record dating back to last year. But other than that, they're at number 3 because of benefit of the doubt, and I'm not afraid to admit that. Bills, they have the MVP front runner. Josh Allen's been fantastic. They're sitting there at 4-1. They're 3rd in points per game. I need more from their defense. Have I said that every week? I think I've said that every week.
I think every single week.
I need more from their defense, but they come in at number 2 for me.
Number 1, obvious. Got him.
The Detroit Lions. Shout out to the Detroit Lions. And they've been kind of under the radar, haven't they? They have won four straight.
I don't know if I'd say that.
But I don't know if a lot of people have been discussing.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the same way that they talk about the Bills, you know. They talk about the Eagles, and I get they're in Detroit, so it's a little bit different. But this is the defending NFC champs. They're first in points per game, sixth in yards per game, second in scoring margin at plus 12.6, seventh in rushing, top 10 in defensive yards per game, seventh best in rush defense yards per game, and also they're very opportunistic. They're fourth in turnover margin. So this team's just playing really well, and defense is actually holding up their end of the bargain this year. As opposed to years past. I thought they were good last year, but I feel like they've taken another step this year.
Massive game this weekend. Even
with all of those new faces in that staff, Kelvin Shepard's done a really good job with that defense. And, yes, they do have a massive game coming up. All right, now, in review, $5, four Colts, three Eagles, two Bills, one Lions. Connor, any issues?
No, actually no issues whatsoever. I do think that it's kind of funny, though, that, you know, all year and all preseason we were like, man, that AFC South's going to be rough. 2-4-1 teams.
That's true. That is true. I didn't mention this off the top of the show, but you know what today is? You know what today marks, at least? 49 straight days of football, brother.
49 straight
between today and November 26th. Meyer's birthday. How about that?
Look
is one.
God, it's already been a year?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It has, but 49 straight days of football from today till November 26th. Now, obviously, not every day is built the same. Like tonight, it's Missouri State versus Middle Tennessee and Liberty versus UTEP. But
still football.
It's football.
It's still football.
And it's on my television.
I did get a question yesterday talking to somebody. They asked me what the best month of sports is on the calendar.
That's a good question.
I said December. I think December. Because
you have everything
going, except for baseball.
Baseball is.
But baseball's over. But you have, like, at least in the city, you have college football, college
basketball.
November's
a good case, though.
November has a very good case. November has got a great case. December's, but you get, like, bowl game. You have bigger games that happen in December, I suppose.
Like, and I would say December because I plan my year, my sports calendar around football. That's just who I am as a person. So I'd say December, but I would take November, December, and I'd take January potentially as a good answer,
yeah,
depending on where your priorities lie from a sports-watching perspective.
Now, I understand why some people, too, would say, like, March, because you get college basketball, Masters around that time. So it's, but, yeah, give me the fall and winter.
I need football. I need football on to be – it has to be football. There has to be football on for me to – and it can't be at UFL, okay? There has to be football on for me to consider.
RIP Showboats.
For me to consider it to be the best month in the calendar for sports. That's my rule. Doesn't have to be your rule. That's my rule. Hour number two is on the way. David Cobb joins us next. Stick around for that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.